Got a little damaged in the car there. A water bottle issue. My name is Eamon. I'm an alcoholic. Just going to rearrange. It's going to mess me up a little bit. Get distracted easily. Okay. Deep breath always helps me. I am very nervous. I have had a rough weekend, and so on my drive over here, I live in Richmond, West End Richmond right now. So on my drive over here, I've been praying, just trying to clear my mind of what I need to say today. And right there, I know that when I start praying to my higher power, it's about what I'm going to say, not what I need to say. So when I pray, I just ask him to speak through me because it's not about me. So just going to kind of get started. I am very grateful to be here. Like I said, it's been kind of a rough weekend, a little roller coaster, you know, family drama. And, you know, at first when I was newly sober, I didn't really have family around. They really hated the idea, well, most of them hated the idea that I was in the program because they thought I was going to change, and I drank with my family, so changing wasn't really what they wanted to hear. So I really didn't have a lot of family around, and I thought that was kind of cool, you know, it's like no drama. And the past year or so, I've acquired my brother back in the relationship, and I don't know, kind of no family sounds like a good idea right now. And it's fine. No. No, I'm blessed to have my brother in my life again. He does have some issues going on. But at least, you know, I'm able to be sober and be somewhat helpful to him. At least be there. And that's one of the gifts that I've gotten in sobriety. So I have a home group. It's basic text. Big book meeting. Meets Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. in Ashland, which is a little north of Richmond. And I have a sponsor, that I talk to on a regular basis. And I sponsor women, and that is all and simple and what I'm supposed to do in AA. I'm supposed to get in the program, go through the steps, do what my sponsor suggests, and then start helping other people. And that's how simple I keep it in my prayer. Because with the alcoholic head, and the thinking that I can do, it's not always that simple. I like to complicate things. So I grew up, and my parents, big drinkers. Mom is born, you know, raised Italian, so we drank liquor and wine. Dad's born and raised German, so we drank beer and liquor. So drinking, big thing in the family. I started drinking when I was 8 with my father, and a lot of people are like, 8, would you, like, steal a sip? And, no, my father was a big drinker, and I was his little sidekick, so we started drinking at a football game in the house, and I had a beer, and every week after that, had a beer during football. And, but to me, like, drinking, my parents did not make drinking a big deal. To me, drinking was just like drinking water. It was not a big deal to me. Now, when I took it, I felt different, and I liked the way I felt. I liked it better than water. Water, you know, it's just water. It's like nothing changes when you drink water. You're still thirsty. I don't understand the problem. And so, but growing up, drinking was not a big deal. You know, people, my friends would be like, "Oh, we're gonna get a 6-pack of beer," and I'm like, just a 6-pack? Well, I don't understand what the problem is. And I was like 14. And so one of my theories in drinking was, well, do you want water or alcohol? I'll take alcohol. It's no big deal. I'm thirsty. It's what I'm going to drink. Whatever, you know. And so I drank quite a bit in the short time of drinking career. had a lot of consequences. What drinking did for me was it silenced a lot of things that going on up in my head that I didn't realize is what is alcoholism. You know, I can remember like being in the third grade and just having like all these issues and all these things on my head that I'm just constantly worried about, and like, I gotta get this done. And I'm like, I'm in third grade, what do you really have to worry about? And, you know, and I just can remember being stressed. And, you know, my father was in the military, so we moved around a lot. And so, you know, I mean, like every 6 months to a year, we would move around. And so you never really got to know anybody and stuff. And you know, never really fit in because you really didn't have time. And I just kept on remembering that as long as I had alcohol in me, it was going to be okay. Everybody loved me. I was the superstar in the class. And I could do no wrong. And if I did do wrong, which usually happened, I knew we were going to move soon, so it really didn't matter. I did have a lot of consequences. A lot of my consequences were just stupid little petty stuff, you know, elementary, middle school stuff. First time I got in trouble with the law, I was 14, and they threw me in juvie jail. Something about my anger issues or something, and drinking and doing other things or something, and, you know, you're kind of out of it, so you really don't remember all the charges. And so we had just moved to Newport News when that happened, and they let me out right before school started, and I started going into high school then. And they immediately put me in this program in high school. I guess I didn't like juvie jail, me going to juvie jail, but they put me in this program, and it was cool to me because I didn't like school, and which is ironic because I went to college for like 10 years or something, so, you know, things change. And, but every Friday they would take us out of class for about an hour, and we'd sit in this room, eating animal crackers, drinking Sprite, talking about alcohol. And most of us really didn't pay attention, or we give the whole please everybody, and then when we get out, we're just going to do what we want anyways kind of deal. Yeah, that's a good point. Let's do that. And then when we leave, we just go get, you know, drinking it high and stuff, you know. So I went there for a while, and when I was 16, I got in a little bit more trouble, and I got into the wrong place, wrong time is what I like to call it. Really what happened was I was drunk. I ran my mouth because I have an attitude, had an attitude. I can still have an attitude. Huge attitude back then. I wanted to fight everybody. And he had a bigger gun, so I ended up getting shot, and the school really didn't like that. So I got out of the hospital, and school said, you can either get kicked out of school, or you can go to AA. Once again, I'm a pleaser. I will take care of what I need to take care of at this moment and not think about my consequences. So I went to AA, and I was 16, and no offense to anybody who's over 40, but when I was 16, I went to this meeting, and it was a speaker meeting, and I'm sitting in the back row, and I'm like, I do not need to be here, I don't understand why I'm even here, I came in late, I left a little early, you know, I'm like, I don't understand, the speaker is up there talking about some blah, 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 and he's like old, I think he's like 40. I was 16. There's a bit of a difference. Now I'm 33. 40 is not that old. But I tuned myself out. I did not want to accept that. Even though he was 40, even though the people in our big book, you know, when they talk, that was years ago, that I have something in common with them. And I just wanted to tune that out so I could say that I didn't belong. So I was mandated to go to three meetings. So I went to those three meetings. The first one I was drunk. The second one was a speaker meeting. The third one, my counselor from school went with me. So I had to pick up a white chip then. And then I just lied about the rest of the times that I was going to go. Because I didn't have to go, but he suggested I go. And I don't take suggestions. It's too much like tell me what to do. And so I didn't go to meetings. I just kept on drinking. I finally graduated, got kicked out. That's not why. Parents kicked me out because of my drinking, and because the way they looked at it was that, you know, I don't care what you do, just don't make it public, and just make us not have to deal with it. Apparently I made them deal with it a little too much, so they kicked me out, and moved in with my brother, and I got a job. I was a firefighter paramedic, and I did that for a few years, and all I did was drink and other substances. And after a couple years, unfortunately, and I can be honest about this now, but unfortunately I even drank on the job. And which, you know, they'd find me passed out in the back of the ambulance waiting for a call or something, like, oh, I'm okay, you know. And so it was impressed upon me very strongly by my brother to do something with my life. And I looked up to my brother big time. So I decided to go to college. And I am very headstrong, very strong-willed. Some people call it stubbornness, but I am very determined. And I wanted to go to one school for one program. This is what I'm going to do, and you can't tell me no. First semester, I applied. They told me no. And I got pissed. And so I just reapplied because that's my determination. It works out to my good when it's for something useful, I have found. So I ended up going to Longwood College. Not university, college. I went in 2000, and I was drunk pretty much the whole time. I really don't remember much. I would love to tell you great college stories, but mine consisted of waking up drinking, going to maybe a couple classes and drinking, and then just getting drunk. And it's really all it consisted of. I'm not really sure how I passed my classes. But, you know, I remember a couple times friends would tell me, you know, and I use friends loosely, people that didn't want to see me die is pretty much what that equated to. We never really hung out because they didn't want to hang out at the bar all the time. But they'd be like, so how many drinks have you had? And I'm like, it's only 9 a.m., you know, what is your problem? I've had 2 shots, no big deal, you know. I guess that was a problem. And, you know, so they would say little things like that. They'd leave little notes on my car about my drinking and stuff, or, you know, and I just throw them away. I'm like, whatever. So pretty much college, I was drunk the whole time. I also dabbled in some other hard substances. And the way I look at that is that drinking is my problem. One day I walked 10 miles just to go get alcohol because it's snowing outside and I didn't have a car, and because I needed the alcohol. And that's how I can separate my alcoholism from my being a drug addict, for me, just for me. Because drugs, I'd be like, well, if it's there, I'll do it. What is that? You know? Alcohol, I'm going to search for that. I need that. And so I wrote a paper in college. Kind of remember this. More remember it now I'm in sobriety because I found the paper, but I wrote a paper in college, and the title of the paper, I was in a mental health class. It was a class I was taking, not in the mental health group. clarify that a little bit. It was a mental health class, and my professor assigned us all papers, and she told us what the topic of our paper was going to be, and mine was alcoholism. And I was drunk, and I wrote it the night before with a bottle of Jack sitting beside me. And the title of it was Don't Be an Alcoholic. And I paraphrased the 12 steps in the paper. And if you can space that out, it takes a page and a half, just to let you know. And I turned it in the paper, and I got an A-, and in red words, and nothing in the whole paper was written on. The 12 steps were underlined, and at the very bottom of it, of the last page of the paper, it said, very good content. You might want to reread. And I don't know what she's talking about. I guess she knew something that I didn't know at that time. and I packed it away and didn't really pay attention to it. It wasn't until I was supposed to do an internship for school that I went back into AA. So as a procrastinator, because I'm an alcoholic and I procrastinate a lot, I had to do an internship in school, and I waited to the last minute. You know, it was like 3 weeks before we were supposed to start the summer internship, and I didn't have a place, and the only other place available was a camp in Richmond. And that's like the worst for AA, for alcoholics, because it was 100% no alcohol policy on the camp, and the nearest place of alcohol was like a mile away. And I mean, I made the trek a few times. Let's not get crazy or anything, but I'm just saying, it wasn't the best situation. So I got fired 3 weeks later, and because I was drinking and came back to the camp drunk, and that considered being alcohol on campus. And so I got fired. So what did I do? I went out and drank. And I got found, I guess they found me in the car or passed out or something. I don't know. I woke up and I was in Tucker's in Richmond, and not quite sure how I got there, literally. Not quite sure why I was there. So my alcohol got a little out of control. It helped me get through life is what I thought. So I went through treatment for about a week, and you know, they went to the meetings there and got out, and they were like, find a home group, find a sponsor. Find a home group, find a sponsor. So I got out, went to start going to some meetings, met a lady, interviewed a few people about her. So I wanted to make sure I picked the right sponsor. And so I asked her finally to be my sponsor, and she seemed so nice. I don't know what happened. Since I asked her to sponsor me, it was like total different. I don't know what happened. No, she's a very awesome person. And so she started sponsoring me, and immediately we started going through the big book. She would take me to places, you know. She'd be like, hey, you know, I'd call her, and she'd be like, hey, where are you going? And I was like, I don't know. And she'd be like, come to this meeting with me. You know, I stuck near her. And I was in jeopardy of getting kicked out of school, and I had a hearing on September 11th of 2001, and I don't know if it was because of the day. I don't know if I was once again given a reason, you know, I don't know what happened, but I got free of all charges, and that was probably pretty bad for me, because I looked at it as I was invincible. I've never had a DUI. As I said, I was a paramedic firefighter, and I did that in Farmville, too, and, you know, the cops all knew me, and whenever they'd pull me over, they'd be like, oh, it's just Amy. Get her to her friend's house, or throw her in the little cell, you know, just for the night, let her sleep it off or whatever, you know, and that's just how it was. I never got a DUI. Never got drunk in public, nothing like that. And I got off on all charges and was welcome back to school. And that was bad because now I know I'm invincible. I always thought I was invincible, and now I know I'm invincible. And I know things can't hurt me anymore, and I can do what I want. And for an alcoholic, for me, that's a bad place to be. And so had an experience and had this cat for about a week. And the whole time I'm going over the weekends back to Richmond to talk to my sponsor. And it, more of the talks were like, oh, we're going to a meeting. Do you need to pick up a white chip? Yes. Because during the week, you know, it was like I just couldn't stay sober. And because I wasn't ready. I'm invincible. Who's going to be ready, you know? So I had an experience where I had this cat for about a week, and sad story, he ended up dying, and very sad story. The only reason I was upset about it is because I wasted a perfectly good name on this cat, and he wasted it away. And just to let you know, I have two cats right now. They're 6.5 years old and spoiled rotten. So just to let you know, I have gotten better. But it was the same weekend that I was supposed to go to the state convention in Hampton, and it was the first one I've ever been to and all this, and, you know, I was like, I'm not going to go, and I had some of those people that didn't want to see me die in college drive me 3.5 hours to Hampton to go to this, convention. I went to the convention surrounded by all kinds of AA people, very strong sobriety, surrounded by all kinds of strong AA women, rooming with three other strong AA people. And why I'm making that so clear is that with all that around me, I was not ready. I was not beaten down enough. I was not ready to come in. Because on Saturday night, I went across the street to the Friday's bar and got drunk. Came back that night, passed out in the bed, went to the meeting in the morning, and the guy stands up and he's like, well, we've all had a good weekend. Everybody's been sober. And having your sponsor just give you that. She was very shifty like this. She'd look at me a little bit and just give me this little shifty eye like, we'll talk about it. And I'm like, ah, I'm in trouble. I knew it, you know. And I was like 22. It happens. And I say that because I was not ready. I was not willing. I was not honest with my sponsor. I was not willing to really go all the way to do what I needed to do. I still thought I was invincible, so I had a huge wall to still be broken down. So I ended up telling her that I was done. I had to go out and drink. She could not sponsor me anymore. I didn't want to waste her time anymore, and I went out and drank. And I had a place to live for spring or for the Christmas break, so I went to a rehab center. It was a 28-day program. But it was out in Roanoke, and my friend took me, and I just didn't have a place to go. And that Christmas, it snowed. And I was like, man, it's cold out, so I went there. Christmas break was only 19 days, so I left after the 19th day. I mean, I only needed a place to stay. It's not get like I was going to get sober or something. And hitchhiked back to Farmville and started going back to school and started drinking. My last drunk was on the 20th of January of 2002. And the drinking was all the same. That morning, and, you know, I have had many blackouts, but that feeling I had in the morning, I couldn't find any alcohol, so I went to class. Horrible sitting in a class that you're literally shaking at. I know people are behind me talking about me. I know there's something on my shoulder, but I can't get it off because I can't see it. But I just felt like, I was also doing some heavy drugs, but I always felt like something, like, I was not right. I was scared. I was just not right. That, and it was abnormal psychology class, so I figured, like, somebody was talking about me. Like, today we're going to talk about, and here's your example. Okay. So, that's 21st. I ended up getting in my car. I told my professor I got to leave. I took a few swigs of alcohol because I was literally shaking and could not drive back to Richmond. So I took some alcohol, drank, threw it out the window. By the grace of God, that happened. Came to Tucker's again, and because that's what I knew to do. Went to Tucker's. Next morning, I woke up, had a seizure, almost died. And the next day after that, being told by the doctors, this is what happened. You have been to jails. You have almost died. You have been in hospitals. What is next? And I was truly terrified. I come off very strong. Inside, I am such a wuss. And that's why I've never killed myself, because I'm a wuss. And when he told me that, I was truly scared. And even more scared, I realized that I didn't know if I could actually do this. And what that looked like is when I got out, I went to a meeting, and a lady from Dilwyn, Buckingham, somewhere in there, asked me, you know, I've seen you around. Do you need a sponsor? I said, yes, will you be my sponsor? I quit all side activities at school. I came back to school. I quit all side activities at school. Went to a meeting every night. And that was very difficult in my head because I was like, drive? What are you talking about? And but, you know, women came to school and picked me up. I drove and went to different meetings. And went back to Richmond and went to meetings. I did whatever it took to stay sober. And I had never had that feeling before. I was back in the same town where I was drinking. I was back around the same people I drank with. I realized that not everybody in school drinks like I do. There are some people that don't have to drink. I didn't know that. I thought college meant everybody had to drink. And so I started becoming friends with them and hanging out with them. I started hanging out with the people in AA. And I started going through the steps. If you're new or if you're looking for a sponsor, I'm going to give you a little suggestion. Calling a sponsor once every 3 weeks, not a good idea. So I called this person who was an incredibly nice woman. Very nice. And I caught her with, you know, a bunch of crap was going on, of course, newly sober. And I talked to her, and she was like, oh, why don't you call your sponsor? And I was like, I thought you were my sponsor. And she's like, well, this is how that looks. And so she suggested I find a new sponsor that's going to work for me, and she was absolutely right. I was using her by name, and I'm not actually having her as my sponsor. So I ended up getting a sponsor. It used to be my first sponsor. And we started going through the steps. And every weekend I would go back to Richmond and go to meetings over the weekend, meet with her like for 3 or 4 hours, and then come back Sunday night and go back to school. And then through the week I would go to meetings, and that's how the rest of that semester looked. I did my internship over in the summer, and it was at Virginia Beach, and I once again went all the way back up to Richmond on the weekends, went to meetings, met with her, came back Sunday night to Virginia Beach, went to meetings in the evening. Luckily, I didn't know anybody except for AA people down there. Went to meetings and did what I had to do. And because I didn't know how to do this, but I knew who did, and so I listened to those people because I knew this is what I needed. Not really what I wanted, but what I needed, and that's why I stayed. So going through the steps, the hardest part for me was I knew I was an alcoholic. There was no question about that. My problem was I didn't realize my life was unmanageable, and it was definitely all of that invincible feelings. I didn't know that my life was screwed up. I didn't know that was what screwed up looked like, you know? I mean, people told me, but I don't listen very well. And so understanding the fact that my life was screwed up, you didn't have anywhere to go. You don't have any friends except for these AA people. And at that time, I really didn't consider you guys friends. I was like, they're just the people to get me sober. That's all. And, you know, your family no longer wants to talk to you. You know, I didn't really have a legal tax-paying job. And my sponsor had me write all that stuff down to realize how my life was unmanageable. And once I'm able to realize that my life is unmanageable, then I was able to move on. So I went on and did step two and step three, and which is very hard because we get to step three, and she's like, okay, let's kneel down and pray. And I'm like, you want to one? And I don't like touching people. I didn't like hugging people. I had like a 3-foot perimeter around me, nobody even close to me, because I felt like if closer you got to me, you could see inside my soul, and that was not pretty at all. And so I felt like if you stayed away, yeah, I was a little psycho. It's gotten better. I can hug people now. Get through that. So I knelt down, though, because she said to. And that's I didn't know what to do, so I just did what she told me. And I knelt down. We did a third-step prayer, and we sat back on the couch, and she said, okay, step four, let's go. And I was like, wait a minute, didn't we just pray? Does that count for, like, a week or something? And so we moved on 4-step, which was great. And my biggest problem with 4-step at that time was the fact that I know I'm a rotten person. I knew I was a rotten person. I knew the bad things I did and the bad things I thought. But as long as it stays up here, it doesn't matter. I didn't want anybody else to know about it. And so I balked on the 5th step a lot. I was able to do the 4th step. When it came time to the 5th step, such a patient woman she was. I would, like, read a sentence, get pissed off, stand up, walk out of her house, slam the door, walk down the street, blow off a little steam, come back in the house. She's still sitting on the same damn couch. I'm like, very patient woman. Eventually, it got to the point where I had to get a new sponsor because it just wasn't working. I wasn't hearing her, and she is the one that discussed that with me about hearing a person. And so I ended up getting her sponsor as my new sponsor. And we sat down, and I, you know, I had heard her a few times and had talked to her a few times because she had asked me, you know, to talk to her. And so I got her as my sponsor, and we kind of talked a bit, and we went over the 4th and 5th step. And she picked up my 3-ring notebook, looked at me. We're in her house. Thank God she said this, in her house. Because there are sometimes I meet with my sponsor, like at UCROPS or, you know, Panera or something like that. So I'm glad we were in the house at this time. And she picked up the notebook and looked at me with a very straight face, and it was already the fact that I was half scared of her anyways, because she was very intimidating, I saw at that point. Not anymore. I think she's great. But she picked up the notebook and she looked at me and was like, you know, you can either stay here, get over your fears, read what's in this book, and we can move on because I know how badass you are. Or, and you can move on and get better, or you can pick this book up, stop wasting my time, and get the hell out of my house. After some thinking, ultimatum. I ended up staying there, and it took 2 days to read my whole inventory. And had a lot of anger inside, and was able to tell her everything that I had done. And she asked me how I felt after that second day. And I was like, I feel like crap, thanks. I appreciate it. And she said, good, 6 and 7, here we go. So can we take a moment? And so we went in 6 and 7. The biggest thing I saw about that was that when I came in, I was a fidgeter. I could not sit still. Literally, you just would shake. Lynn knows, so just shake. Like, okay, like I got music in my head. La la la, here we go. For 1 hour and 9 minutes, I was able to sit still and do 6 and 7 and sit and just pray and be still. And when I looked up from being done with that, I looked at the time, and it just shocked me. Things like that just shocked me and helped me understand that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm in the right place and doing what I'm supposed to do. And so I moved on to 8 and 9 and which is good that I redid 8 and 9 because I thought I did 8 and 9 a long time ago on my own. So I went up to the people and it would look like this. Hey, sorry about that. Won't do it again. I'm out. And when I learned how to do the correct way of 8 and 9, it sucked because then I had to go do that back to them. I'm like, they're like, didn't you do it sorry? I'm like, no, apparently not. And so my amends looked much different. Going up there and actually being humble and saying that I was wrong. That for me is a big thing. I'm never wrong. And to say that I was very wrong in things I did and to actually sit and listen to how I could make that right and what I could do to make that right. And some people were like, just don't drink. And so far I've been able to do that. And some other people were like, oh, let me get my list out. We got time for this? Or, okay. And moved on to step 10, and my sponsor was big on 10-step buddies and 11-step buddies, and we did 10-step buddies, which was very helpful to clarify 10 and 11. And for me, I like 10-step because I hate the 4-step. I've done many 4-steps since. Having done one maybe 6 months ago again, but the 10-step is very helpful for me because when something's going on right there in my life, and this is how I think about 10-step. When something's going on in my life, I call a friend or call my sponsor. This is what's going on. We pray about it. We talk about it. And then I move to help somebody else. I get it off of my head. I get it away from me. And I don't understand how, but helping other people help me. So step 11, reading, doing the prayers. My prayers started out, good morning, good morning, higher power. I didn't call him God at first. Good morning, higher power. Thank you for waking me up. And at night was, please, higher power, let me wake up in the morning. And that's how simple my prayers were. They have expanded a bit, not a lot, but a bit. I'm able to sit still for a little bit longer in the morning and night without falling asleep. I tried that whole meditation thing, and I just end up falling asleep. It helps if I sit up and do it. I've learned laying down meditation, that's called sleeping for me. So I sit up and meditate now. But, it just kind of helps me clear my head and clear my mind of what's going on and stuff. Step 12. I learned that step 12, it's not, it's not just about sponsoring people. I ended up having a car before I was done with the steps and able to give other people rides, coming early, staying late, and help set up and clean up, talking to people that were newer than me. Another one I do not like is speaking. Whether it's 2 minutes in a meeting or up here, but it's a way of giving back. I can't always take, take, take. My sponsor says I've been in the program long enough, I need to give, 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 not take, take, take. And so when I am asked to do certain things in sobriety, I say yes. As long as I don't have another commitment, I say yes. And it better be a good commitment is what my sponsor says. Today I sponsor women. I've had some experiences in the past sponsoring women, and rough weekend, but when my sponsor calls and tells me her weekend, I am not thinking about myself anymore, and that is a great blessing. Because you listen to them talking, you're just like, wow. One, I remember that feeling, because you're new. And two, realizing that I'm not the only one that has problems today. I'm not the only one that has issues today. I thought when I got into the program that I thought that I was going to stay sober, be a millionaire, have an awesome job, and everybody was going to love me, and everything was going to be great. No issues. What I've learned is some people do like me. I have a good job because I worked hard for it. And even though I have some issues that happen in sobriety, I have a way to get through that. I am very blessed that I have a way, I have a program to get through those issues. I have been through a lot through sobriety. I moved around quite a bit. Recently it's been 2 years, but I bought a house, and nothing glamorous, but it's good for me. It's a roof over my head, you know? I used to be homeless. Well, not really. It's a lie. I lived in a tent in the woods down in Chester. Now I have a more stable house, roof. You know, I have a job that I do taxes on every year now. I had to have my sponsor teach me how to do taxes. Didn't know how to do taxes. But I do taxes now every year. I have two cats, like I said. Spoiled rotten. One plays fetch. That's how spoiled she is. It's a little weird, but whatever. I have a relationship with my brother. He is definitely going through some rough times. He has three kids now. I have a new nephew who's 3 months old. And he got diagnosed with cancer a month and a half ago. And going through chemo and just being able to, he lives down in Newport News, and just being able to be there when he calls and not saying, well, I'm too drunk to drive, or not even answering his phone call. And just being able to drive down there and to, you know, whether it's staying at the hospital with him or picking up the other two kids, because they're also in the process of getting divorced. Picking up the other two kids and saying, come on, guys, we're going off. We're going to go get out of this atmosphere. And just being helpful to them, has been a blessing in this program. My niece is going through, she's going to be 13 next month. And I know how crazy I was, and she is just like me. I learned some information yesterday about her that I can see her going through the same path that I did. And I just pray that God will stay with her, and through my experiences of being able to spend time with her and to talk to her, that I won't have to be as tough on her that it was on me. Knowing that I can relate with her, knowing that, I am now sober, that I can talk to her, and I don't know what's wrong with her, but she actually listens to me. She like looked up to me or something. She told me that last year when we were hanging out. She's like, you're so cool, Auntie Amy. I'm like, really? We've talked to her. But knowing that all I can do is to be there, and she has to have her own experience, but it's just so hard to see it, that it was just looks just like the way I did when I was 12. But believing in my higher power, that she too will go through her experience, then it's going to be okay no matter what happens. And I have to believe that. And if I was drinking, I, one, would be out drunk, and two, would not be helpful to either one of them, anybody in my family. And that is a huge blessing that I have gotten in sobriety, is just to be there. So even though it's been kind of a up and down weekend, I just hung out with them all, time, Friday, Saturday, and dropped him off this morning. You know, being able to hang out with him has just been a blessing, and it's fun. 12 and an 8-year-old, man, that's fun. You know, we go do go-karts and batting cages and stuff like that. So it has been a true experience. Another thing, I've gone through a lot through sobriety in my mind, of course. I'm sure you guys have gone through a lot, too. But this is about me. When you talk, you can talk about yours. Okay. I don't like to cry. We had to laugh a little bit. Okay. One of the biggest things I've learned in the program is that I am not in control. I want to be. And a lot of things that I did when I was drinking was my way of trying to be in control. And, but I have to realize that I'm not in control. My higher power, my God, is in control. All I can do is, show up and do the work, and stuff. And I had a huge experience, that I have been dealing with for 10 years now, that, I am starting to come through the other side, I guess. I've done inventory every year on this issue. I was on the volunteer truck up to the Pentagon on September 12th, 2011. And I was like 60 days sober, maybe, something like that. I don't know. Because I was invincible. And I said yes. That and I just am a volunteering kind of person. And I said yes. And it was very hard. You know, I came back and I had nightmares. I had a lot of anger. Did tons of inventory. But the biggest thing that I have realized with that is that... And the biggest thing I've realized with that subject and how I play it into my... program today is that I went up there with a set agenda, and when I go somewhere with a set agenda, I'm one, very pissed off when it doesn't happen the way I want it to, and two, it usually doesn't happen the way I want it to. I cannot go anywhere with an agenda. It's kind of like coming here. I was told I'm going to speak. Okay, I just get up here and speak. I just kind of flow what happens and let God take care of the rest. And I have to realize that when I went up there, God was in control and I did what I was supposed to. I helped the people, not that I thought I was going to help, but the people that needed the help. And that has truly helped me. Kind of put that situation in the past a little bit more for me, because that is a topic that until recently I never would have talked about and stuff. But the change that has happened, the change that I have seen in myself through that experience and understanding that I'm not in control and I just have to live my life to the best of my abilities. And just show up to the meetings, show up and talk to people, show up and do the action that God will take control and God will provide the outcomes. And as long as I do that, I'm going to stay sober and my life, too, will be okay. So, thanks.